Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Looking forward to today's show, folks. We got a good show for you today. Got an old friend who's stopping by. We're going to talk about his newest book and a couple of legendary spots, hot spots for the paranormal overseas. He's going to have to help me with pronunciations. You guys absolutely slay me when it comes to pronunciations. I don't speak Welsh, by the way, and I don't speak it very well. Richard Estep is our guest today on today's show. The new book is Spirits Behind Bars, The Haunting of Shepton Mallet Prison and the Skirrid Inn. I believe that's what it is. Let me tell you a little something about Richard first before we bring him in. One of the reasons I absolutely love this man, he's such a not only an accomplished author, an accomplished researcher. You know, his day job is an emergency medical technician, an EMT in the medical field. And God bless him, because he's put his self on the line over the last few years during the pandemic. And we thank him for that and putting himself in the face of COVID, and worked way too many hours to help all of us out there. But I got to thank him personally, and I don't know if I ever got the chance to thank him personally. We were at a convention in Texas, and Richard helped me out in the biggest way. I've said on the show before, I have many issues with neck and back, and I've got a few broken vertebrae. I've got a few herniated vertebrae, and I was having a real bad time with my L5S1. This is back before I'd gotten some real basic help with my vertebrae. And I was in excruciating pain, and I had brought some pain patches with me, and I had nobody to help me with them. I couldn't even reach back to put them on. And Richard saw I was in real distress and came up and helped me with that, and was helping me throughout the entire weekend, helping doctor me up so I could get through the conference. So I really, Richard, I'm going to bring you in now. I just want to thank you so much for getting me through that weekend, first of all, and welcome into the program.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. I remember that convention, and my bill for $856 will be making its way. This is the U.S. after all.
Oh, I'll have to bill that to my really crappy insurance program I have through the show. So, yeah, we'll
see. Those are billable hours. Yeah. No, you're welcome, Tim. It was a pleasure to help. I hate seeing anyone in pain, and thank you. And I would just say I appreciate the shout out. Every single healthcare worker, nurse, doctor, paramedic, technician, and the people that never get enough respect, the hospital cleaning staff, and the families that supported them, all did an amazing job. So I'm just one part of a very large team.
Well, we should point out that job isn't done yet, my friend. I mean, we're in this tridemic, if you want to call it that, or whatever they're calling it now. I mean, you've got, what is it, RSV, you've got the flu, and you've got COVID all on top of each other. And I think we're all kind of walking around right now like there's nothing wrong.
RSV season is in full swing, as it is this time of year. This is also flu season. And we have this new strain of COVID we're hearing about now, which is pretty elusive when it comes down to immunity. So we're definitely in for yet another roller coaster ride, and the hospital system is getting battered. So the men and women that are working in hospitals and that whole profession, still, this has not stopped. People may have stopped cheering in the streets for healthcare workers, but they are still at war, and we can all do our part.
Well, I tell you, as a guy who's a drain on the system, I'm still cheering for all of you. I think I use my fair share of the system on a weekly basis. I can't tell you how often I'm in the doctor's office for different things between the heart, the back, the neck, the foot. I certainly appreciate my doctors and nurses, and I let them know as often as I can how much I appreciate them, because
that's wonderful.
Yeah, they're all very special to me.
Most of them got into medicine to help, and so hearing gratitude is a wonderful thing. Helping them out where you can is a wonderful thing too.
Yeah, yeah, and I definitely do all my follow-up care, and I do what I can to help myself out so I can help them out. That's important too. I think as a patient, we should remind everybody that, you know, you just don't go into the doctor to triage yourself. You should go into the doctor to do the follow-up care too, so you don't have to go back and see them. That's one of the other things.
Absolutely.
Now that I've gotten on my soapbox, I should get off that soapbox and we should talk a little bit about the paranormal. Since we last talked, Richard, you've had a slew of stuff out there. You've been very, very busy, not just with your day job, but with your passion as well in the paranormal. Gosh, since the last time I saw you, you've had quite a bit of stuff going on.
It has been busy, and I've gotten some good writing time thanks to the pandemic. So I've gotten books out on true crime, corruption throughout U.S. history, which was an interesting one to research. Mm-hmm. I have another serial killers book out this month, finishing one at the moment on familicide, and then a little bit of breaking news, but I just signed a contract with a publisher to write about a subject that I think will be a little bit controversial, but one that I really want to do an objective study on. So the title of this book is In Search of Demons.
Really?
Mm.
Ah, you know, I did see a little something. I saw you putting out feelers online about that, about the demon topic. Tell me, I know who you sent feelers out to. Have you gotten any hits on those?
Yeah, some people I greatly respect. And my goal with this is, because it is such a loaded term, you know, people either are devoutly believers in demons and demonology, or devoutly not. They are adamant that this cannot exist. And I really want to cover it from all angles. So in addition to talking to folks that are qualified from a spiritual faith-based point of view, I want to talk to the absolute skeptics. I want to talk to the mental health professionals to talk about where do we draw that particular line, you know? I want to talk to physicians about how throughout history, seizures and other medical conditions have often been mistaken for demonic possession. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to folks that are familiar with the satanic panic that happened through our history. We'll be looking at that and their role in the media too. Yeah. I think that there has been an explosion in the last 10 to 12 years, thanks to paranormal TV, of claims of demonic hauntings and activity. And I really want to approach this book, Tim, as I'm coming in without a bias, hopefully. I want to see what the evidence is, what the testimony is, and why in the 21st century, when we can see into the furthest reaches of the universe, when we have more knowledge on a global internet than at any other point in human history, our knowledge base doubles, I believe it is every hour. Why do we still believe in this concept that is thousands of years old? So I'm very excited to start researching that this year.
You know, you bring up an interesting point here, Richard, and that's this. One of the things I run into when programming the show, I look at trends. I look at what people want to hear, and I look at what people want to, you know, what they want to listen to, what they want to consume. One of the things I find interesting is when I put on a show about demons, or I find an author or a filmmaker or even a TV personality that wants to, or a movie, you know, someone from a movie that's talking about demons, they want to hear specifically about the evil of a demon, but don't introduce the good guy. Don't bring in the guy who fights evil. Don't say the G word. Don't say God, because the minute you do, you just spoiled my fun. Why is it, and I got to ask you this, Richard, why is it that when you bring in the good guy, when you bring in God or Jesus, all of a sudden you're beating me over the head with the Bible and I don't want to hear it? Why do I get that pushback as a programmer where I, you know, it's fun to hear about the bad guy. It's not so good to hear about the white hat or the good guy.
That's an interesting question. It's an interesting perspective you've had there, Tim. I think that, I'm sure that your listeners are smart enough to know exactly what I mean when I say this, but the truth is that demons, and I hate using this phrase, are sexy when it comes to media, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, what I mean by that, to be clear, is I've seen TV shows like Lucifer.
Yep.
You know, they're very entertaining show. You have this suave, debonair British version of Lucifer. He's the bad guy that's having all the fun, right? We see reality show, and the demons are kind of the scary roller coaster ride thing. When you look at episodes of paranormal TV, it seems to be that the ones with quote unquote demonic cases are the best rated, mm-hmm. because I think people love a good scare and they love this vicarious thrill of demon houses. You look at YouTube shows, for example. And ones that have demonology in the title, episodes of shows have more views, many more views,
yes.
than shows that don't.
Yeah.
So I hate to say it, but we have kind of sexed this up as we've done with serial killers.
Yeah.
Society has done that, I think, equally. So now, you know, we've put people like Richard Ramirez and Ted Dahmer. They have multiple series, Netflix, various documentaries. And we know they're terrible. You know, this is the very embodiment of evil in both cases. Mm-hmm. And it appeals to the darker nature of a lot of people. Whereas bringing in God or whatever positive entity, whatever term you would use for that, counterbalancing force, does not have that same appeal.
I think you're
unfortunately.
Right. The Netflix show on Jeffrey Dahmer was straddling such a line that people were like, you know, I don't know that I can continue to watch this, but you know what? I got to continue to watch it because it really is right on that line. It's right on that line of, it might be offending my senses, but I got to continue to watch because it, like you put it, it's that sexy side of would I or wouldn't I? You know, mm-hmm. or it puts you in that what if category where most people wouldn't go. But but if I put myself in those shoes, I could see myself stepping over the line once. But this is a what if. This is a place I'd never go to. But if I had to put myself in those shoes, would I? You know,
well, I also think when it comes to shows like that, a lot of people like to think, what must it have been like to know this person? What must it have been like to be their neighbor? What must it have been like to work next to them? You know, as the author Anne Rule did when she worked next to Ted Bundy on a suicide hotline. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us think, I would have spotted it. I would have figured it out. I'm smart. I would avoid this stuff. And, you know, again, it's kind of like vicariously experiencing somebody else's tragedy and experiencing the darkest basis human nature, but then you come through it safe at the end. And I think when it comes to demons, ever since The Exorcist first hit movie theaters, I believe that's the start of our widespread public fascination with demons, the devil, and that whole aspect of things. And we saw a few horror movies, you know, throughout the 80s and 90s. None of them really set the box office on fire, but it was with the advent of certain paranormal TV reality shows where this became a huge thing, to the point now where it's almost become a stereotype, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Apologies.
No, go ahead.
I'm not saying to those that believe in demons, I'm not saying that there is no such thing. Mm-hmm. I'm also not saying there is such a thing. I'm excited to go on a journey to actually try and figure this out as best I can. But I do think that the amount of publicity and coverage and, I'm very aware of the fact that I'm about to play into that myself, mm-hmm. but the amount of coverage that we've kind of given the subject, it is front and center stage in the public consciousness right now, and it shows no signs of leaving.
You're absolutely right about that. So with that being said, let me ask you this question. So with the type of paranormal research you're doing right now, and we'll get into that here in just a moment, because you are doing some very interesting paranormal research right now with MJ Dixon that I want to get into. You're going to some pretty heavy places, and my question to you is, as you get into heavier and heavier places, are you expecting to see demons? Do you expect to see demons, or do you expect to see malevolent spirits with the occasional demon? This sounds like a weather forecast, I know. Do you expect to see demons, or I hate to say pleasant surprise, because nothing's a pleasant surprise when it comes to the demonic, but is it something where if you do see something like that, you're not caught off guard, but you know that it'll come your way eventually?
I think much of it depends on the lens through which we view the world, Tim. So for example, if you are a believer in the Christian faith, and my respect to you if you are, I think especially if you are a Catholic or of that ilk, your worldview quite comfortably rolls demons in. When I came to the US in 1999, I started paranormal investigation with a local team. And a really sad case I investigated with the team was in a suburb of Denver. And it was a young Hispanic couple who had just bought their first home. They were very Catholic. And again, you know, complete respect for that. And they had told us that they were being tormented by a demonic entity. And so first thing I do when I walk into somebody's house, I do this on an investigation. I do it if you invite me over to your home. So fair warning, I want to know what's on your bookshelves. I'm really nosy like that. As a writer, I can't switch that off. Okay. So I'm looking, and I also want to see what's in your movie collection. And I see Rosemary's Baby. I see The Exorcist. I see demons, demons, demons. So that tells me something about the worldview of that individual already. Mm-hmm. And if you are predisposed to want to, imprint a demonic motivation or force on what's happening, you're more likely to do that if it's within your worldview. And of course, demons aren't restricted, or demonic entities aren't restricted to the Christian faith and worldview. You know, there are many other faiths that have similar traditions. I want to point that out. We're so Christian centric because we live in the West. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's a degree of you bring something to the table in the forms of your own beliefs and biases. And when it comes to theology and matters of faith like this, I mean, faith is such a key component of this, right? Mm-hmm. It's challenging sometimes to step back from faith and try and take a cool, objective look at what may really be going on. This poor family, after we investigated their home, we did find that they were near a very major road. They were on the flight path to Denver International Airport, and their house used to shake very specifically when heavy traffic was going along the roads and when planes were coming in. And it sounded like something was walking in a sinister way on their floorboards. Hmm. You know, so you would hear this creak, creak, creak straight out of a horror movie. We were able to demonstrate this was caused by vibrations. No evidence of a haunting at all. And my heart went out to these lovely people because it was their first home together and they were going to start a family. And we demonstrated to them, guys, here's what we think is going on. We spent some time there, like in the house, just so they could get some sleep because they hadn't been sleeping. And they would not accept that there was not a demonic infestation in the house. And they ended up fleeing the house, and it was foreclosed on. It was tragic.
Wow.
Yeah. Broke my heart. Absolutely broke my heart. Wow. So I think that belief is probably one of the most powerful forces out there. And belief is, as we know, both a good and a bad thing, depending.
You know, there's one thing that leaves me a little perplexed here, Richard, and that's this. You know, as you watch media reports, as you read different things, see different things, they'll tell you this, that especially in America, especially in the West, as you're citing that, you know, mainly demons are a Western thing, that we're tied mainly to Christianity and demons, and that it seems like demons are a Christian thing, that we fear that the most. It seems like people in the West are leaving the church, and that's at least from media reports. With people leaving the church, I don't want to say in record numbers, but over the last decade and a half, they seem to be pulling out of the Catholic Church in particular, but seem to be pulling out of the church. Why is it the belief in demons is still so strong? If you're pulling away from your faith and not showing up at church every Sunday, why is the belief in demons still there, but not in God?
Well, you're going to have to, I'm going to have to apologize to you, Tim, because my mom always used to say it was rude to answer a question by asking a question.
Sure.
But do you think that if we had not just had 10, 12, 13 years of shows, which focus heavily on the demonic, do you think there would be that same public belief in demons that we see now? If, you know, we all know the shows I'm talking about, and I'm not throwing shade at them.
Right.
Yep. I'm just saying that they're very, very prevalent. If there had been no such thing as paranormal reality TV, would we see the same widespread belief in demons? What do you think?
Probably not, because it put a huge spotlight on not just the demonic, but it kind of lumped in, and I think you may agree with me, it kind of lumped in earthbound spirits with demons. I think it kind of assumed one was with the other, so that it would absolutely terrify the layman that's watching at home.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, when I work as a paramedic, one of the most challenging calls for us to deal with is an aggressive, belligerent, out of control individual, somebody that is trying to harm us, is trying to harm themselves. And they're usually not doing it on purpose. They're not necessarily homicidal, but they are impaired. They have a psychological issue, a behavioral issue, or quite often it's a chemical overdose issue, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That aggressive behavior is something that's terrifying to deal with and can be dangerous. If you see that from a spirit or from some kind of invisible entity, whatever it is that we're investigating, doesn't necessarily make it a demon. But I've seen a number of aggressive hauntings, which I think could be put down to an aggressive spirit entity. It's a leap, though, from that to saying it's demonic.
True.
You know, and I think that leap is all too easily made if we're not careful.
Why is that leap made so easily, though? Why is it such an easy leap for people to go from earthbound spirit who's just hanging around and maybe grumpy to all of a sudden full-blown, you know, Beelzebub is in the living room and is taking over my home and my life?
Because if the demonic is a central part of your belief system, or even a peripheral part, and you are fed a steady diet of shows which are demon, demon, demon. This week, we have a demonic haunting. We have a demonic entity, demonic, demonic, demonic. You begin to internalize that. It's the whole frog boiling thing, if you're familiar with that term.
Yep.
You know, and I think the paranormal community as a whole has been partly dealing with that whole, the temperature has been turned up and up and up as it relates to demons over the past decade. And now it's just such an easily thrown around term. Now, again, want to reemphasize, I'm not saying demons aren't a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know. And I'm not the wisest man, but I'm wise enough to say I don't know. And I'm really excited to talk to people of various faiths and perspectives and disciplines, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I do want to talk to a demonologist. I do want to talk to a bishop. I do want to talk to, I'm hoping, a shaman that can give me different cultural perspectives. And I also want to talk to guys like Kenny Biddle, the flat out skeptics of the world that will say, you know, nope, this is absolute pucky. It can't happen. You know,
yeah.
I'm not a big believer in saying this can't happen, therefore it doesn't happen. But there's a lot to be gleaned from seeing this phenomenon from all sides, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's going to be one of my major work projects for this year ahead.
It's fascinating to me. I'll tell you that, Richard, I'm always fascinated by things like why most psychics don't see the demonic, why everything is sweetness and light on the other side and they don't see a demon coming, or, you know, that it, you know, they'll say, oh, no, there's no such thing as the realm of hell. I really, because to me, you would think there has to be balance everywhere.
Well, you know, I've never seen Australia either.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I've never seen Australia, but it's there. And I know they're listening because I get emails from them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know, Tim, honestly. Like, I'm trying. My main goal is to cast a wide net. And my main concern, I don't want people to think I'm coming in to do a hatchet job. I'm not. I don't want people thinking I'm coming in to trample their beliefs. I'm not. I'm trying to take a cool, rational look at a phenomenon. And because it's so faith-centric and because people are so emotionally invested in this subject, it could be a challenge. But I feel that it's a question whose time has come, if not long overdue.
I know it's going to be a big book, and I mean, like, physically a big book. there's going to be a lot of pages to it, because you're taking a big bite out of a huge subject, that's for sure.
In order to do it justice, yeah, it's going to be quite a bit of work.
That's for sure. At this point of the program, let's take our break. When we come back, let's tackle the new book, Spirits Behind Bars, The Haunting of Shepton Mallet Prison. Am I getting it right by saying the Skirrid Inn? Is that right? Or am I...
Oh, right on the money, Tim.
All right, because I'm not good at Welsh. I don't know if you know this or not, Richard. I'm horrible at it.
Neither am I.
Okay, that makes two of us. When we come back, we'll talk about Spirits Behind Bars and about MJ Dixon, Richard's partner in crime, on some of his paranormal investigations. We're going to talk about an interesting method that the two of them have come up with, which is absolutely fascinating and astounding. We'll come up with that, and we'll talk about it when we come back. Richard Estep is our guest right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Our guest is author and researcher Richard Estep. The book is Spirits Behind Bars, The Haunting of Shepton Mallet Prison and the Skirrid Inn. Richard, I tell you, sitting down with this book is refreshing, because it kind of picks up at the end of, well, I shouldn't say the end of the pandemic, because it really wasn't the end of the pandemic. It was a break in the pandemic, when the pandemic is breaking, when we're finally getting back to society at somewhat of a norm. And you're looking to get back to England, because you're a dual citizen, if people can't tell by the accent. I don't know. And you're looking to get a break, to get away. How long had it been since you'd been back to England?
Oh man, seemed like forever. It had been a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I'm used to going home once or twice a year.
Okay.
Just to see friends, family, touch base, you know, just reconnect, because I'm a very British American.
Okay.
And when I go home, I'm a very American Briton. So, you know, I'm kind of a son of both worlds now, and I'm very happy with that. But I was getting very homesick. I wanted to do something paranormal in the UK, and the opportunity came up to research what's believed to be Wales's oldest mountain inn. There are a couple of competing claims, and they're all so old. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. We're looking at like a millennium. And then what is believed to be Britain's most haunted prison, certainly one of Britain's most haunted prisons. So I absolutely said yes. And was able to connect with a team of skilled investigators. MJ, of course, we've mentioned, is an investigator and a sensitive. Alex and Karin, both skilled investigators. Karin, an excellent photographer as well, in addition to that. Liz, who, again, a skilled investigator who's willing to really go all out to help me find answers. And we had a small crew, for the most part. And then we threw in a couple of public events when we got to the prison, which we can talk about in good time and why we thought that was a good idea. And lastly, there was Carl, who was our tech guy and driver extraordinaire too.
And Carl's quite the colorful character in the book as well. It seems like you got quite a bit of entertainment out of Carl.
He's, you know what? He's a great guy. He's a great investigator. You should have him on the show. He's quite the raconteur, I'll tell you. So, yeah. But that guy knows more about the tech of the paranormal. He's forgotten more than I know. So it's a good mix. I think a team like that, a good core team, is a good mix of people to be alone in a dark and haunted place with.
One of the things that reading the book I had never thought about, but actually was quite interesting to learn, was the homemade Faraday cage that was brought up. You were talking about putting a REM pod. This was when you guys were at the was it the White Swan Inn?
Yeah, the White Swan Inn in Henley-on-Arden.
Right. So you're at the White Swan Inn and you put down a REM pod, and rather than going to the trouble of putting together a commercial Faraday cage, it was just, what was it, four roaster pans?
Yeah. And I can't take credit for this idea. This is another one that was I stole essentially from Kenny Biddle, who his opinions on REM pods are well known. And he asked me once, hey, why aren't you shielding your REM pod? If you truly believe that REM pod activity might be paranormal, why aren't you doing everything to rule it out? And the argument, which is a very compelling one, is, and I proved this by borrowing an ambulance and a fire truck, that REM pods will be very easily set off by radio signals. Mm-hmm. So not your cell phone, which we know that'll set off a K2, right?
Right.
But a REM pod will be triggered by any radio broadcast from, let's say, a fire truck's radio, a police cruiser's radio, if it's in the neighborhood. Any strong radio broadcasting source will trigger a REM pod.
Yeah.
And so why would you not want to rule that out? So the easiest way to do it, you can buy Faraday cages. If you're particularly handsy, you can make one. I'm not. The easiest way to do it is get four roaster pans, or actually used four and then a fifth as a lid.
Okay.
But you make a triangle of roaster pans. You duct tape them together until you win. You put the REM pod on the middle of a fourth pan, put the cage around it, put a lid on top. And then you put an unshielded REM pod about a foot away. So what you find is that radio frequencies, radio transmissions will not set off a shielded REM pod. With a walkie-talkie, we had to get to within an inch of the shielded REM pod, so an inch of the roaster trays, before it would trigger a weak REM pod response. So, you know, shield and go, that's pretty effective.
That is effective, yeah.
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 Now, where this starts to get interesting is you would then expect if, let's say, an ambulance is driving by and somebody's talking on the radio, you would expect the unshielded REM pod to go off because it's fully exposed.
Yep.
And the shielded REM pod to not.
Right.
Where it gets weird is when you start either seeing them both go off or you start seeing the shielded one go off but not the unshielded REM pod.
Yeah.
Because then I have no explanation for you, you know? Mm-hmm. Then you start looking at how could this energy field be triggered? How could this electromagnetic field be triggered inside this shield? I'm far more likely to believe REM pod activity is paranormal if that REM pod is shielded. And so, you know, all credit to Kenny for putting that idea out there. I don't think he envisioned the nightmare of bakery that I used to put it together. But I teach this technique now to investigators whenever I can. And it's kind of scary how many don't bother to use it because it means your REM pod is 80% more quiet.
Yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And I think there are so many of us that want to believe that REM pod activity is paranormal. And the arguments I've heard against it are quite valid. The argument I've heard is that, you know, maybe you're hampering the spirit's ability to interact with the REM pod if you shield it, which is valid. But I would counter with the argument, Tim, if you're getting that activity despite shielding it, that's far more impressive as evidence than just an unshielded REM pod on its own. So if you want to raise the bar with a REM pod for your standard of evidence, shield it. And if you don't, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, you mean to tell me that, okay, four roaster pans is going to stop somebody on the other side from bending over and sticking their hand in there and putting it in front of a REM pod? I mean, you know, I don't buy that for a minute.
Well, we still don't know how that interactivity happens, right? Is it a tangible touch? Is something actually affecting the energy rather than breaking the field? We don't know in paranormal terms anyway how that would happen. We do know how it happens in entirely normal terms. You physically touch the thing,
right,
put your finger near it, or you broadcast through it. But I'm fascinated with this idea that we still don't understand how these entity spirits, call them what you will, manipulate our equipment.
True.
But we have proven with this technique that something is able to set this thing off even when it's shielded, and that's cool.
Well, even if you take and you expand the cage out a little further, so it's not, I mean, you might have to build it a little custom. So take the roaster pan, for example, and maybe you cut the aluminum foil or the tin or whatever it is out, you know, so it's a bigger cage per se, not so enclosed, and you build a higher roof to it, you know, Not so it's so open that you're not shielded completely.
Right.
But just enough so you've got a little clearance. Mm-hmm. In that respect, you kind of take that argument away, don't you?
Which argument would that be?
The argument that a spirit wouldn't be able to interact with that REM pod in some respect.
I think it's such a hypothetical.
Or are you saying concept. That? Are you saying that the energy is dispersed by the Faraday cage, anyways, and it doesn't matter?
What I'm actually saying is, we just don't know.
Okay, all right, well, that's fair.
Yeah. And it's fun to theorize about. I love the way you're thinking, like building bigger REM pods. You know, the next thing I'm starting to think about doing for future investigations is putting voice recorders and tape recorders inside a bigger Faraday cage as well. Because if we can start getting EVPs inside these Faraday cages, that cuts out the whole stray radio transmission theory, right?
Right. But you know that what drives me nuts. What drives me nuts, Richard, is the most the holy grail of recorders, the Panasonic, the Panasonic RRDR60 or whatever it is lackadaisical in shielding.
Sure is. MJ and I actually talked about this, as you'll know from the book. Like, she's a big believer in the DR60. We got some truly compelling EVPs from it during this investigation. But this is a device that's notorious for picking up its own internal mechanics.
Yes.
Which is one of the reasons it was discontinued.
Right.
Yeah. So, I don't own a DR60 because I don't want to remortgage my house.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And I also think that there are a lot of false positives. I respect MJ using it, you know, and she got a couple of EVPs that clearly were not the working mechanics of the device. So do I think it can pick up genuine EVPs? I think any recording device can. But I do think the DR60 muddies the waters. I think that it is far more willing to give you bursts of static and clickety-clack that, unless you are willing to set a higher bar for evidence, it's far too easy to say, did you hear that? That just sounded like, let's kill Tim.
True.
You know?
True, yeah. Is it fair to say it's being lazy if you're using a DR60?
I think it's fair to say that you should use the DR60 in conjunction with another audio recorder.
Okay.
So I would always, throughout my investigations with MJ, I've always used my own digital voice recorders. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One is that I'm, when I write my books, I'm transcribing dialogue. So if you read a book I've written, there's actual dialogue there. And this isn't paraphrased. This is stuff people said that I have directly transcribed from the incident, from the recordings, you know? Mm-hmm. Because I realize I write about some pretty incredible things and I want the record to be as accurate as possible. But when you use multiple voice recorders, if you get EVPs on one but not another, that starts to raise the question of, was I picking up, oh, this was the recorder nearest the doorway leading outside. Was I picking up somebody talking outside where the recorders inside the room didn't pick it up? You pick it up on all three recorders, including the DR60, then you got something weird going on, right?
Right.
Or at least it's more likely that you do. So I've been a number of cases where several different voice recorders all picked up the same EVP and it sounded subtly different. Mm-hmm. Several cases in which it sounded the same on them all. And then some in which only one recorder picked it up, even though they were only a few feet apart. Hmm. So I think of them like security cameras, Tim. You know, if you're a detective solving a murder, and I tell you, well, Detective Dennis, I've got four security cameras, four views increases your chances fourfold, as opposed to having just one video of the crime, right?
Right, right.
So I'm a big fan of using multiples. The DR60, it's not my personal tool of choice. Again, I think it has a lot of negatives. I wouldn't say using it is lazy. I would say use other methods of verification to try and back it up. And that's one of the absolute knockout EVPs we got at Shepton Mallet was picked up on my recorder as well as MJ's. So.
Okay. Good. And by the way, folks, our guest is Richard Estep. We're talking about Spirits Behind Bars, The Haunting of Shepton Mallet Prison and the Scare It Inn. Let's talk a little bit about some of the locations in the book. And you mentioned one of them, Shepton Mallet Prison. I want to talk first about Scare It Inn, because Scare It Inn really is about, I don't want to say a good, it seems like it takes up over, I don't want to say half of the book, but it's a good half, if not more, of the book. It seems like you had a lot of activity at Scare It Inn. And Scare It Inn is really one of those locations that, as you mentioned, is very, very old and has a reputation of hangings, which is interesting in itself, but controversial hangings within the inn. And it also has a bit of a cheeky reputation with a cup, and I struggle to say the pronunciation of the cup. You go ahead and say it.
No, because I can't. It's spelled P-W-C-C-A. And you know who I want you and your listeners to have sympathy for tonight?
Okay.
You know Josh Hurd?
Yes. Yeah.
So Josh, of course, is Mr. Malvern Manor. His silky smooth tones. He's also the narrator of my audiobooks.
Yes, yeah.
And I sent him the manuscript to Spirits Behind Bars, which is now out. And the thing I think that has scared him more than anything in his time in the paranormal was offending the Welsh audience with his pronunciations of some of the words in there. So whether it's the Pooka Cup or the Pucker Cup, the Devil's Cup is what it's most commonly known as.
Devil's Cup.
This inn is so old. We're talking again about a millennium. It has been a wonderful tradition down through the years that owners of the pub at night would fill the cup with mead or ale, beer, and leave it outside the front door as an offering to evil spirits or the devil, whatever dark forces might be lurking. It was an offering for them to drink the mead and leave the inn alone. Essentially a bribe.
Yeah.
And that tradition went on for hundreds of years. First thing I asked when I got to the Scare It Inn was, do you still do that? And the landlord doesn't. And the inn seems to have been fine. So, you know, it seems like the cup, the Devil's Cup, now lives above the fireplace in an alcove, which is where it now sits. I just thought that was a beautiful, wonderfully creepy tradition.
Now, at one point in the book, you use the Devil's Cup, don't you?
I didn't drink out of it because It's not a fear thing. It's a hygiene thing. So I looked at the age of this thing too. Obviously, there have been many of these cups down through the generations, of course. Mm-hmm. So the tradition is continuous, but the actual cup itself dates back to the 1800s, I believe, late 1800s. So it's a very, very cool cup. But yeah, I thought it would make an interesting control object.
Sure.
And I love that whole tradition, that whole ritual of leaving that cup outside, that offering. If you look at the Skirrid sign, because every pub in Britain has a pub sign, it is Skirrid Mountain, which is, you can see it from the inn, hence the name, being struck by lightning. And it has this very weird, jagged kind of split to it. Mm-hmm. The tradition is that the Skirrid Mountain got its shape because when Jesus was crucified on the cross, at that exact instant, supposedly, a bolt of lightning came down from the heavens and split the mountain.
Hmm.
And so it's a wonderful piece of tradition, a wonderful piece of folklore.
Right.
And this whole area of Wales is just steeped in these wonderful histories and customs. You talked about the hangings. You walk into the inn, everything is beautiful, old wood paneled, you know, it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And you walk through the back door on the way to the bar, and there is a staircase which leads upstairs, and you see a noose, a hangman's noose, dangling three stories up from the ceiling. And so the story is that Judge Jeffreys, who was an infamous hanging judge, he had his bloody assizes in the area, was supposed to have used the second floor of the Skirrid Inn as his courthouse, his courtroom, and was well known for sentencing people to execution. Mm-hmm. Ironically, Jeffreys ended up, just as an aside, on the run when the king he served was deposed and was hiding for his own protection, trying to get away, and was recognized by someone, one of the rare people that he had not ordered hanged, and ended up in the Tower of London. But Jeffreys was not actually at the Skirrid, or at least I haven't been able to find any historical documentation to prove that he specifically was there.
Huh.
But this story persists, Tim, that the Skirrid has had, I keep hearing 180, 185 people hanged on the main staircase inside the building, and it makes no sense. It's a gorgeous carved wooden staircase. If you were to hang somebody from it, you would give them a lengthy drop. They would kick, they would scratch, they would lash out, they would break this wooden staircase so many times. And why have a hanging indoors?
Right.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
So it's a fine tradition. I think it's far more likely, though, the evidence is a little bit more solid that, yes, there were magistrates' assizes held at the Skirrid Inn, but any hangings would probably have happened with a gallows erected in what is now the parking lot behind the inn.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but you know how it is in the paranormal field. These stories do persist. And so one of the spirits that's supposed to haunt the inn is Judge Jeffreys' personal hangman. He's supposed to be a pretty malevolent, malicious spirit that stalks the staircase where he was said to have plied his trade. I could not find any historical documentation to support those stories.
Hmm. Interesting.
But, you know, just to go further down that road a little bit, I'm sure most of your listeners, if not all of them, will know we have this whole concept of stories taking on a life of themselves.
Yep.
We talk about thought forms and things like that in this field.
Mm-hmm.
That story has been told so many times, and it's so compelling. I do wonder if it hasn't sort of taken on a life of its own. The staff do recall the time a guest at the inn checked out rather hurriedly after being strangled by unseen hands in the bathtub.
Now, I seem to remember that. Yeah, wasn't there rope marks around the neck,
or at least marks that would have looked like the same diameter as a rope? Yeah.
Yeah, I think there is something to that, and I think you're right that you know, we sometimes do project and create things that, because the lore is so, it's so strong, and we go in with that belief, and we want to see something so badly that maybe we do create that thought form.
Yeah. Or maybe, you know, somebody has heard the stories, is going to sleep, so scared of what's, you know, it starts to take root within their own mind, especially if they're particularly sensitive or psychically inclined. There are a lot of good hypotheses that we can kind of bat around for that. But I would emphasize that the Skirrid is not a dark place for me. It was very friendly. Mm-hmm. The locals would come in and they would drink, and it was a good atmosphere and stuff like that. We would have to wait for them to drift out in the evening before we could do any meaningful investigation.
Sounded like the food was wonderful.
Full English breakfast there. My God, I'm salivating just thinking of it. So, I don't do beer when I'm on an investigation. I don't do alcohol.
Yep.
We did make one exception on the last night of this one, just because it would have been churlish not to have a drink. But I cannot recommend the Skirrid enough. If you like ghosts, good food, and good hospitality.
Steak and ale pie was good. Yeah.
You have me at steak. The ale's a bonus, and then the pie is perfection. So yeah,
there absolutely. There you go.
I'm getting old, Tim. I like to do my ghost hunting in comfort.
It's the best way for me as well. I'm not a big fan of, hey, let's go sleep on the cement floor of a asylum or penitentiary. Me, I'm more of a nice comfy inn with a wood fireplace and it's got a restaurant attached and
I'm doing both next month when I get back to the UK. Just as an aside, I wrote a book called The Hanging Pit about the haunting of Bodmin Jail in Cornwall.
Okay.
That was 3 years ago, I believe. Since I wrote that book, they have saved the jail from being torn down and going bankrupt by turning it into a hotel. And the rooms, so the cells are now rooms, and they have a very cell vibe. I always imagine this would be what Al Capone's cell looked like, you know, in Eastern State Pen when it was tricked out with all the conveniences.
Yep.
So I'm really looking forward to going back. When I was there, it was open roofed. It was torrential rain up to my knees in mud.
Oh.
And now it is a full room service hotel. So I'm fascinated to see how that has affected the haunting.
That would be interesting. I mean, not only to have a little lap of luxury while you're staying there, but to go from what would be torturous stay to a lovely stay would be quite amazing. I think
I shall let you know. Stay tuned. This time next month, I'll tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to that one. Shepton Mallet Prison. You want to talk about a torturous stay? That's one that I don't think anybody would sign up for.
I kind of think your listeners, who are my people, right?
Yes.
You and I know the sort of person that would listen to the show. They're our people. I think they would, because I'm a big war movie fan. And if you've ever seen that war movie, The Dirty Dozen.
Yes.
You know, yep. Lee Marvin recruits a bunch of convicts from the U.S. Army. They're all on death row, and he's going to lead them on a suicide mission, and they'll get paroles. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
The prison at the beginning of that movie was based on Shepton Mallet, because Shepton Mallet is one of England's oldest prisons. It's just a few miles away from Stonehenge, just so you can locate it.
Mm-hmm.
Built in the 1600s, and during that time they had it was seven people hanged. Seven civilians hanged, and they are all buried actually within the prison walls, as is the tradition. In the 1940s, when the U.S. Army came to Britain en masse in order to prepare for the invasion of Europe and D-Day, there were enough serious offenders in the U.S. Army that the government gave them Shepton Mallet Prison for the duration of the war. So it became the U.S. Army's federal military penitentiary, basically Fort Leavenworth in England. And during that time, there were a number of executions. I believe it was 17.
Wow.
The majority by hanging, but then two by firing squad. So, and that all happened during actually a 2-year period. So the US military executed three times as many people in 2 years than the British government did in 400.
Wow. Well,
so how do you say no to a place like that?
They got good use out of that one, didn't they? I know what there. Well, just the description that you use of it in the beginning of the chapter for Shepton Mallet just makes it sound like it's definitely not Club Med. Breaking big rocks into little rocks. The toilet facilities alone are just enough to make you want to retch. It just not good. Not good accommodations, Richard.
So to be clear, the toilets that you actually use are fine. They're great. The cell toilets look like something out of a nightmare that you cannot conceive. Mm. The folks who run the prison, the tour guides that run it and escort you through, they keep a very high standard of cleanliness in the areas where, you perform your own, where you go to the toilet and you get your coffee and your tea and things like that. Mm-hmm. The rest of the prison, I mean, it's in a wonderfully preserved state, but it is still a pretty badass prison. And so as you walk around the cell blocks, they vary in age, they vary in condition. But some of the most hardened offenders in British history were held in this prison. And also, some people that had no business being in there. And what I'm thinking of specifically, imagine you've got all of these thieves, murderers, robbers and rapists, and then they also put the suffragettes in there.
Jeez.
The suffragettes who were campaigners for women's rights.
Yeah.
These were the ladies that put their lives on the line, their freedom on the line. A number of them died while trying to secure women's suffrage. And they were also incarcerated at Shepton Mallet. So you have just this immensely colorful history. The prison has been in various movies too. If you saw Paddington 2, you got a good glimpse of Shepton Mallet prison. Mm-hmm. If you watch the docudrama, the David Tennant show, Des, where he played the serial killer, Dennis Nielsen. Mm-hmm. They actually now have the Dennis Nielsen cell at Shepton Mallet. Dennis Nielsen himself, one of Britain's nastiest serial killers, was never a prisoner there, but they used one of the cells and dressed it. So David Tennant played him on the drama show, and they've kept that cell exactly as it was for filming. So you're also wandering around film set too, which is pretty cool.
That is cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Without taking too much away, I don't want to take too much away from the book because I want people to kind of live through these investigations. And folks, really, when you sit down to read the book, you'll go through the investigations that Richard and MJ and the rest of the crew do, both at Shepton Mallet and at Skirrid Inn. And man, you guys get some amazing evidence. I'll tell you that. Both through current technology and psychically, really, MJ and the group, they pick up some amazing stuff. I got to ask you, Richard, tell me, first of all, at Skirrid Inn, what was, if you can for us, tell us what was one of the more amazing things you picked up at Skirrid Inn first and then Shepton Mallet that really kind of knocked your socks off?
The Skirrid, it was a personal experience I'll never forget. It's very embarrassing. So let's just keep this between you and your many listeners. Okay. And every reader of my book, shall we?
Okay, sure. But,
so our MO was that, as I already said, we would wait for the inn to close for the night and then we would investigate through the night. Mm-hmm. And that meant that we would go until sunrise if we could, or as close as we could manage, go to bed, sleep through the morning into the early afternoon, stopping only for breakfast, and then do it all over again the next night. So one afternoon, I had just surfaced and it was about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. Sunlight coming in through the windows, and I'm in room 1, which is supposed to be the most haunted room at the inn, and I'd requested it. Now, it's a big room and the bathroom is down some stairs. So there's a door that leads down some stairs. And so I get up and, I'm going to go wash. I'm going to go brush my teeth, all that kind of stuff. My phone is by my bedside. I go down, get to the sink, turn the water on, grab my toothbrush. My phone starts ringing. And I'm one of those people that just gets annoyed by a ringing phone. I have to answer it.
Yeah. Yep.
Even though the odds are great that it's a telemarketer,
yep,
I have to answer it.
Yeah.
So I go back up, I pick up the phone. It's, I think my insurance agent wanted something very trivial, renew a credit card, something like that. I'm up there 30 seconds. I hang up, I go back down. And the tap that I had left running full bore was closed off.
Whoa.
Yeah. Now, bear in mind, I'm as naked as the day I was born. So I'm looking around and I start testing the tap. I start trying to debunk it. I'd open this thing full blast because in order to get hot water, it's one of those taps where you have to open it wide and let it run for a minute to 90 seconds before you have hot water, right? So I open this thing full bore nuclear. It is now fully closed.
Whoa.
So I'm a little weirded out. I'm like, I don't know who just did that, but thank you. That night, we're doing some work with a spirit board and in the same room. And MJ and Corin, Carl and Alex are all around. They're doing their thing and started asking, you know, they're communicating with what seems to be a female spirit or claims to be. And they ask if it is the lady who turned off the tap in my room. And I'm going crimson at this point because we're actually webcasting this. You know, we're broadcasting this. Yeah. And of course, the planchette goes to yes, it is. I'm like, oh no. And one of the ladies asked, you know, did you like what you saw?
No.
And I'm like, don't answer that. I said, should I keep my clothes on for the rest of the stay? And the board spelled out my name. And then it went to F. Then it went to U. And I'm like, oh no, don't be obscene. Don't be obscene. Oh. And then spelled out the word funny. Richard Funny. So there are stories of a couple of female spirits that are said to be resident at the Skirrid Inn. One of them, Fanny Price, was a lady who's buried actually just a few hundred feet up the street in the churchyard up there.
Okay.
And she actually has the Skirrid's name in, on her gravestone. She was that associated with it. Because remember, Tim, these inns throughout British history, they were the focal point of all social life in the village.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people that did not leave this area. They didn't go more than 20 miles in their entire life. They were born and their birth was celebrated at the Skirrid Inn. They grew up, they played there. They drank there as adults. They retired and drank there, and then they died and their wakes were held there, you know? So this was the center of that community.
Right.
And so a number of those people, it seems, may still be resident at the Skirrid Inn. And if the board is to be believed, one of them saw me naked and turned off my tap.
Well, you know, tried to turn you off before you got turned on there, Richard.
In my defense, it was a very cold room.
Well, that's the excuse you used with her anyways.
Shut up. So that was the Skirrid.
That was Skirrid.
Shepton Mallet was just phenomenal. The big challenge there was you have so much square footage to cover, you know, you have so much ground to cover. One of the things I found most interesting was that MJ had told us that we were being followed. And she believed it was actually not a prisoner, but a former warder, prison warder. And we did get some EVPs that implied, especially in the area of the execution chamber, that implied that, you know, somebody was curious about what we were doing. Well, the end of this particular evening, it's one of the few times I've ever seen MJ genuinely freaked out. She said it was getting very close. It was getting very oppressive. It was not a good thing. So we went to take a break. She went to smoke a cigarette, I believe, and was just standing by the gates. And I happened to be walking up to her, and both of us heard the sound of footsteps walking towards her. Now, my first thought is, even though this prison has very high walls and very thick gates, somebody had broken in. You know, this was a security concern because all of our people were accounted for and they should have been behind us in the kitchenette area.
Yeah.
And so I will never forget saying this. I said, I'm 6'2" and I'm very angry because they were coming from the opposite side of a van. We could see them. We could hear them. I'm sorry, coming towards us. I go storming around the van and I am ready to throw down with whoever it is that might have broken in. I hear the footsteps. MJ hears the footsteps. My recorder, which is not a DL-60, picks up the footsteps. And of course, there's nobody there. They walk up to the driver's door of the van and they stop like that.
Whoa.
So two witnesses both heard the same thing, picked up on a recorder. not an animal. You know, they, unless this was a fox wearing a hobnail boot. And of course, there was nothing in sight. There was, I looked under the van with my flashlight in case, you know, some kind of critter could have gotten under there. Nothing.
Yeah.
It was just remarkable. Usually you hear disembodied footsteps like above you in a building, don't you? You hear somebody walking around. When it comes right towards you in an open space, it's very strange and odd.
Yeah.
So that is something I will never forget from my time at Shepton Mallet.
That is crazy. Yeah. Wow. 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 Yeah. And I would think it would take a lot to shake MJ too, especially with all the work she does with the other side. That's got to be, that had to be something pretty, pretty scary.
I do think this was also like a fairly long week. So we were all very tired. We were all exhausted. And we'd been investigating for essentially 7 nights in a row. So, you know, there's a degree of that where you get a little bit frazzled. And I was writing the book as I went along. I'd written 35,000 words of this book were written in the locations.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So half the book was actually written on site. In fact, there are pictures of me sitting in the dark of the gatehouse and the execution chamber typing away like a lunatic because I'm trying to lay down this track as it's happening, as I'm experiencing it. So, you know, there's a degree of that emotional, that fatigue, you know, and heightened emotion kind of plays into it. And it makes me wonder if we don't become more vulnerable to these phenomena, the more kind of strung out and tired we get, more frazzled.
You bring up an interesting point. With that creative energy that you put out there, do you feel, you just put it brilliantly. Do you feel like that brings spirits forward, wanting to communicate with you more, wanting to see what's going on with you, that they do get interested and they want to interact with you more?
Well, one thing that MJ likes to do, as she's trying to connect with them, is, you know, she'll say, Richard is here and he's writing your story. He's trying to tell your story of the Skirrid Inn or of Shepton Mallet Prison. What do you want the world to know about you? And I've often believed that what many of the spirits that we get EVPs from are trying to achieve, they just want to be heard. They want to be remembered. They want to not be forgotten. And as a writer, that's actually become my goal. I gave up on trying to convince anyone, including myself, of the reality of the paranormal a long time ago, because you can present the best EVP, you can present video evidence of a full-bodied apparition, and people have 100 reasons why they'll tell you it's faked or it's not valid or whatever. So that ship sailed. What I like to do now as a matter of personal philosophy is try and uncover the stories of those who lived in these places, not just the prisoners, but also the cooks who fed them and the prison officers who, at the risk of their own lives and health several times, took care of them and protected the public from them. I try and give them a voice, and I try and also encourage people to visit these locations to experience them for themselves. And where I actually finished the book, or near enough anyway, was that we had gone to the graves by the wall of the 7 individuals who were executed and buried by the British government there, and just said a quiet thank you to the spirits of the prison for allowing us to be their guests, and me personally for allowing me to try and tell their story as best I could. So it was very moving. It was very emotional. I do not hesitate to commend people to visit Shepton Mallet if they have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, most definitely. Let me ask you this, Richard. This thought kind of pops in my head as I hear you talk about writing a book on the scene of a place where a lot of emotional things have happened. You're throwing your emotion in as well. Seems like there's a lot of high emotion happening at the scene, scene of the crime, so to speak. We'll put it that way. And what I kind of line it up as, it's kind of the same as a musician who's writing a song in the middle of an event, you know, and is really on top of it and very close to it. Do you take a second look at it as you're maybe doing, do you do like an edit or a rewrite where you take a step back from it and look at it and maybe edit it a little bit and do it from afar? And take a like a outside perspective of it before you put it to bed?
I do, because I'm not journaling. That's the main thing. So yeah. I've always followed the writer's tenet that you write three drafts, you know. Mm-hmm. The first draft is just the word vomit onto the page.
Yep.
The first draft of your manuscript. The second manuscript is where you fix any kind of structural problems and you make sure there is actually a coherent story there. And then the third draft is the final polish, you know,
yep.
where you realize, like, I used the word specifically three times in one paragraph. I need to take that out, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So the stuff I write first draft on scene is very, very raw. And I actually post that stuff on Patreon. My Patreon supporters read it and they're kind of my feedback crew and they'll tell me what they like and what they don't. But I need to have left the location, gone back to the real world, showered and slept in my own bed a little bit, put it away for a week or two, come back, and then I'll start taking out things that I feel either don't stand up as possible evidence or just don't fit the flow of the book well.
Okay.
What I won't do, I will never add anything. I will never put in any untruths, but I will take out any stuff I consider questionable or marginal. And then what I'm left with is hopefully a fairly readable book that I then polish up at the end. So, but what it's like is, do you ever see that movie, The Notebook?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I always, I deal with a great many dementia patients as part of my profession. And it's so sad that dementia robs people of their identity and their sense of who they are. And I bring this up because as I look at my bookshelf, as I look at, let's say, Spirits Behind Bars, towards the end of my life, whenever that may be, I can look at that book and open it up and I can be right back there in the hallways of Shepton Mallet with those people having those experiences. It's more visceral to me than video footage. It's more meaningful to me than listening to the audio files, mm-hmm. although those are helpful when I transcribe. This story is truly a chapter of my life and it's one that I'll never get back. And so I hope to, if I've done my job right, readers will feel like they're sitting with me in the dark in these places that they may never visit. And they're not just getting a laundry list of things that go bump and bang in the night. They hopefully are feeling the same things that I'm feeling. Otherwise, what's the point? I'm just writing a blog journal, you know?
It absolutely is that. You know, sitting down with the book and reading it, it is a story and it is a slice of your life and living through that slice of your life with you. It isn't, as you put it, a laundry list of, and then this happened and then that happened. And then, you know, it's not just, you know, what happened when you went on this trip. It's very much in the moment. It's very much the emotions of what happened. It's very much, the dialogue of what happened between all of you. It's almost like being a fly on the wall and seeing everything that happened with everybody in the group. It's very intriguing is what it is. It's almost like you're eavesdropping on the group as you guys went through your trip.
Kind of. And it's one of the perils of being a friend of mine, Tim, that you may end up in one of my books. you know, and I really owe big thanks to everyone that was there, to MJ, to Corin, to Alex, to Liz, to Carl. Because they went in knowing full well that I would be writing about, you know, almost all of this. Anything can be fair game, including banter, you know, or yep. a few snarky asides and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it makes it, or my goal is to make it a more human reading experience.
Yeah.
I don't want to read a report, you know, and I don't want to put out a report. I want this to be an experience. And if I've succeeded, people are going to get that feeling that they were not so much eavesdropping, but part of the adventure themselves.
Yeah. And you definitely are. You're part of the adventure along with the rest of the group when you read the book, Spirits Behind Bars. Real quick, before we wrap up today, Richard, I want to talk about some of the research that you're doing with MJ Dixon. Which, man, this is fascinating. You know, MJ and I talked after she was on the show, and she let me in on a at the time, what was a little secret, and that was that the two of you were doing investigations involving remote viewing. Now, do you want to mm-hmm. explain how this is happening and how exactly you two are doing this?
Yeah, I mean, Part of me thinks we should just come on together and
we'll do that. We'll do that. And we're going to do this relatively soon because MJ has a new book out. So I think we're going to tie that in. So what we'll do is we'll have MJ on here relatively soon. We'll bring you on as well. And we'll go more into depth, but I just want you to explain how this works just briefly, because it's so fascinating, Richard, how this is happening and what you guys are doing. Because when she told me the idea, I thought that is so freaking cool. I mean, it was, and not only that, but the results you guys were getting were amazing.
So one of the things that MJ has never done, to my knowledge, as long as I've known her, she has never labeled herself as a psychic or a medium or a sensitive, which, you know, people that do that doesn't mean they're not genuine necessarily, but she's always found it almost kind of fatally embarrassing or something to conceal. She's wanted to be better known as, I think, a producer, an investigator, you know, something like that. And she's never been the sort of person to walk into a location and go, I have arrived and I'm tuning into the spirits. You know, she's just kind of had given us these little tidbits of sensitivity. And I said, MJ, can you do this stuff like long distance? She said, I don't know. I have no idea. I said, well, when I go back to the States, what if I go to a location, don't tell you where we are, and then you see if you can tune in and pick some stuff up? And she sounded doubtful, but she said, I'll try it. And we did. And I would say the first time we did it, it was not spectacular or super impressive, but there was enough there that made me think we need to pursue this a little more. She got some things that I couldn't easily explain.
Okay.
That I couldn't just chalk up to coincidence or random chance or cold reading. And it's hard to cold read somebody when you're doing what we're doing, because I actually FaceTime her, but I keep my camera off. And so all she should really be able to do is hear my voice and any ambient sound. That's it. Right. I don't tell her which of the 50 states of the union I'm going to. I could be right here in Colorado. I could be at the Stanley Hotel, the Sally House, you know, the Hinsdale House, anything.
Right.
I don't tell her any of that stuff. And I deliberately keep it off social media. Okay. So usually a clue that MJ and I are doing some kind of experiment is when I go dark on Facebook about where I am.
Okay.
And I invite her then to try and tune in. And she's done so with increasing degrees of accuracy, to the point now where she did a reading at a murder scene location I was at, a serial killer connected location, which was quite chillingly accurate. I mean, the owner of the location was next to me and got so excited, she punched me on the arm.
Wow.
Like, she was like, ah, you know, how did she know that? And I didn't know this stuff. One of the theories that hypotheses I've wondered about, Tim, is MJ reading the scene? Is MJ reading me personally? In which case, I need to clear my browser history. All that stuff is research, MJ. or is she reading the minds, you know, subconsciously, but is she reading that information from the minds of others around me? And we found, interestingly enough, that she seems to be able to pick up on things connected to people that stand close to me while we're doing research. It's almost as if there's a bubble or something she steps into. And to this day, I will get messages from MJ. And she will say things like, are you okay? You feel off. She's a good friend, but it's kind of, you know, what are you picking up on? What are you reading? There was one time she messaged me and I wasn't at a location. And she said, I'm picking up on this is weird, a serial killer-y vibe with you, Richard. And I'm like, firstly, you can't prove anything. secondly, she said, are you at Fox Hollow Farm again? You know, I've written a book about that location. Are you at a haunted location? I said, no, I'm not. I'm at my home office, but I am working on a book about serial killers. And I was actually, as she mentioned a farm, she said, I'm getting serial killer and farm. And so naturally she concluded it was those two things, right? Fox Hollow Farm, I'd written about it. What I was actually doing was writing a chapter about the Canadian serial killer, Robert Picton, who had fed people to the pigs on his farm.
Wow.
So she had picked up on what I was writing about, which was bizarre. So she's kind of surprised herself a few times doing this. in that I don't think she realized how accurate she could be. Now, that being said, this is not a light switch we can flip on and off. We've had sessions where she's been close or passable or hasn't picked anything up at all. Mm-hmm. We just did one on the Chickamauga battlefield, Civil War battlefield there in Tennessee. And again, I didn't tell her where I was. She didn't pick up anything at all. Which I hope means that there are no restless spirits on that battlefield. I would think that if anybody's earned their rest, it's Civil War dead, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So we're continuing to try and figure this out. And one of the things we're going to look at doing going forward is, can we drop the FaceTime connection completely? If I say that at a certain time, GMT, I'm investigating, can she tune in and try and read me without there being any verbal communication between us at all? What can she find? What can she get?
See, I believe she can, and this is a combination of remote viewing and psychic ability. And I'll tell you, and this is why I believe so, and I'll tell you why, Richard. Before he passed away, the listeners of our show are familiar with Joe Hu. Joe Hu was a psychic who was out of the Chicago area, which, you know, God rest his soul, he's passed away now. Joe was highly in tune with both Dave and I. And maybe more so me than Dave, but he would call me out of the blue, much like MJ does with you. And he always knew when something wasn't right with me. I would get a call, and here's Joe Hu on my phone from Chicago, Illinois. And he'd call me and he'd say, "All right, pal, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's going on with you?" And it happened to be a moment when I was down, or it would be a moment where things weren't going right in my life. And he'd say, "Okay, I'm getting that something's wrong with your foot, or I'm getting that, you know, you're in extreme pain, or I'm getting that." And he'd tell me exactly where I was hurting. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, "Joe, you're scaring the shit out of me right now. What, how do you know?" He goes, I just know. "You know, I know." And he was so confident about it, not cocky, but he was confident about it. And he called himself a voice, what was it? Voice recognition, something or another. I'm trying to remember what he called himself. I got to go back and look at it and see what it was. But he was able to, if he was in tune with you and had worked with you for years, could tell you even when the two of you weren't in contact or hadn't been in contact in months. He could tell. He could just tell. He was in tune with you and could tell, and would call you at the drop of a hat and just be like, "I know this is wrong with you. Tell me what's wrong." And he would just know. It was just one detail, Richard. Just one detail. But it was that detail that was really either standing out to him, or it was something that was really wrong with you that you didn't want to reach out about. And it was just really nagging you, and it was like a beacon that was just going off. So I have no doubt. I have no doubt that there's, now that you and MJ have been working together for quite some time, you've developed that bond, okay? Mm-hmm. That you could do that. You could probably accomplish that, where you could go somewhere, you don't have to use the FaceTime. She could probably pick up on that and tell you exactly where you are and what it is that you're doing.
Well, I remain skeptical just because that's my job as the writer.
Sure, sure.
So as I chronicle this story, there are some things that are simply so accurate they can't be readily explained any other way. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. She had a hit at the Sally House, which we'll talk about when we do the show.
Sure.
But it was so on the money. I agonized over this, and I actually wondered. And I'm ashamed now that I did. I wondered if one of my team members, who I trust above all else, these are some of the most trustworthy people I've ever worked with. I actually asked myself, is one of these guys like feeding her information? How could she possibly know this? You know? And of course they weren't at all. But from a skeptical perspective, when some of the hits are so on the mark, mm-hmm. it changes the way you view the world. You know, it really does.
Yeah.
We've all seen sensitives that will say, oh, I'm picking up a negative energy here. It's very oppressive, you know, and it's like, well, yeah, no shit, Sherlock, we're on yeah. battlefield.
Right.
You know,
right.
Well, I'm picking up bloodshed and great tension, things like that. But when you nail, and in this particular case, the something she picked up on was a yellow Tweety Bird plush toy. And so, you know, Tweety Bird, she kept saying over and over, this sounds dumb, I know, but it's Tweety Bird. Why can I not get this image of Tweety Bird out of my head? I open the toy closet in the nursery at the Sally house, and staring back at me is a plush yellow Tweety Bird. Mm-hmm. That is not cold reading. That is not generalization or guesswork. You know, it wasn't Spider-Man. It wasn't one of 100,000 other toys you could name. She nailed that character. And so I spent the next hour on Google, Googling the location name, which she didn't know, plus Tweety Bird to see if there were pictures of that toy anywhere online. And I couldn't find any. And so I got nothing, Tim. And we've had a number of hits like that that are just knockouts. Now, that being said, the big caution we should always have with psychics, mediums, sensitives, whatever you choose to call them, is we as humans have a big blind spot where we tend to remember the hits and not the misses.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I totally understand that. So we have to be cautious. There are certainly as many misses or vague comments as there are hits. Not that there's any attempt to defraud there at all. I think that is her trying to get a grasp on what she's tuning into, because it is an imperfect process, you know?
Yeah.
But the hits when they arrive are so on the nose sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's just remarkable. And what's kind of funny is that they creep her out as much as it does the rest of us. She picked up that I was at the Hinsdale house earlier last year, about this time last year. There was no way she could have known I was there. I was sitting on the bed in one of the bedrooms upstairs looking at a metal crucifix. And she said, why am I seeing a metal crucifix? Someone in the room you're in is very angry that it was placed there. And it had just been placed there within the last couple of days.
Huh.
You know? How do you know how? It's just, it's beyond belief. So I'm really excited to try and push these boundaries a little bit. I'm always looking for that non-paranormal explanation, and often I find it. But in several cases with MJ, try as I might, I just can't.
We're going to get this show together, and we're going to do it relatively soon. I want to get this together, and we'll talk about it, and get both of you on and figure out what this connection is, because it doesn't quite sound like it's remote viewing, and it doesn't quite sound like it's psychic. It sounds, but it's definitely interesting. I know that. But we'll figure out, we'll talk about some of the places you've been and some of the things that she's sniffed out and some of the instances where it's worked.
Sounds good. So I'm always happy to come back and chat to you on Dogmas Radio.
All right. Well, we'll do that. We'll line that up. The book is Spirits Behind Bars, The Haunting of Shepton Mallet Prison and the Skirrid Inn. Richard Estep is the author and investigator behind it. We'll have a link in the description of this program so you can go ahead and get that book. Richard, I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Tim. And thank you to everybody who tuned in to listen to his talk.
All right. Thank you so much, folks. I want to thank you so much for tuning in this week and being with us and being with us for another great week of Darkness Radio. I want to thank our sponsors this week, Microdose Gummies and HelloFresh. Again, if you want to check out everything having to do with microdosing THC and Microdose Gummies, go to microdose.com. Also, get 21 free meals and free shipping. You go to HelloFresh.com/darkness21 to get 21 free meals and free shipping, and enter the code darkness21 at checkout. HelloFresh.com/darkness21 for that deal. Folks, want to remind you to take care of yourself and each other. It's getting colder out there. Winter is in full effect. Do something kind for somebody out there this weekend. If you have $5 extra, donate it to somewhere that can help somebody out there. People need coats. They need hats. They need mittens. They need shelter. They need food. Go out there and do something for your fellow man and woman this weekend. Help someone out there this weekend. Do it for your buddies here at Darkness Radio. We need to help each other this winter anything you can do to leave this place better than you found it. We can do it one step at a time, one day at a time. I know I'm going to do something this weekend to help somebody. I hope that you would do so as well. We need to keep making those steps forward and make progress in 2023 to make this earth a little bit better again than we found it. And we'll see you next week for a great week of shows here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows how to help you save this 4th of July. Upgrade your laundry routine with the new and exclusive first-of-its-kind all-in-one vented laundry combo. Wash and dry in just 68 minutes. Save up to 40% on select major appliances. Plus, when you buy more, you save more. Shop Samsung this July 4th at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.